going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVone, Steven Risotto,
Evan's
aka
in love,
Pasta.
Evan's in love.
In love with the Golden State Warriors. I got to tell you, I have been fawning a little bit over this team the last couple of days, and it's because it's becoming clear to me. It's becoming that the picture is coming into focus. Things are arranging themselves as they should, Dan, and the Warriors are getting set to begin their postseason trek towards a potential fifth title tomorrow against the second-seeded Houston Rockets. What's up,
playoffs?
Man?
Let's go!
Yeah.
How fun is this?
That's the best time of year.
It's so much fun. And we haven't seen this for a couple of years. Just think about it, man.
Dude, where were we 365 days ago?
This series with Houston is just going... There are so many subplots to it, starting with their head coach and Curry, not to mention Steven Adams, and throw Draymond Green into all of this. The histrionics, if you're a Rockets fan when it comes to the Warriors, the team that prevented James Harden from getting to the promised land. I mean, all those characters are gone. Harden and Chris Paul and PJ Tucker and Trevor Ariza. Who's the biggest? Capella? I mean, they're gone, but it's still the Warriors. Those boys are still there. Those boys can still hunt. It's the same three.
That's the crazy part. Like, James Harden and Curry had their battles, God, starting literally 10 years ago. 2015, the Western Conference Finals, the first year that they went on and won the championship. And James Harden dribbles it off his foot at the tail end of Game 5 and basically gives away the series. And it's like Curry and Draymond and Steve Kerr are still doing this.
Wait, that was Dwight Howard days, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was different iterations of the Rockets. There was Dwight Howard Rockets. There was the Chris Paul Rockets. I think even 2019, there was the Russell Westbrook Rockets, of course, with James Harden. And now he's on his, well, he went to Brooklyn, Philly. He's been in three different locales since that point.
This is so exciting. I mean, who do you think is going to be the first to come unglued? Like, who's going to be the first guy to lose it in a press conference?
Dan
first
DeVone.
Guy to get ejected? First guy to, like, really lose their S in this series? Obviously, Draymond is going to be, you know, the obvious choice. But if there's a second play, I mean, there's some, I mean, you got Dylan Brooks in this thing.
I was going to say, I think it's going to be that guy. Who, by the way, and he deserves it. Kind of the bad rap that he gets because he becomes a different person on the court. But off the court, he seems like such a cool guy. I don't understand the sort of switch that professional athletes are able to flip. And he, to me, is Exhibit A. Because in the Netflix Court of Gold documentary, he followed him around. He was part of Team Canada. He seems like just such a nice guy. There's these videos of him stopping and talking to people on the streets and signing things. His days at Oregon, apparently he was a good kid. And then he gets on the court, and I hate this guy. Like, yes. I absolutely cannot stand Dylan Brooks. And it's like he just turns into this villain immediately the moment he steps on the court. And, of course, he was the guy that knocked GP2 out of the air and broke him, broke his wrist in Game 2 back in the Memphis series. So I think if there's a someone who's going to become unhinged, not named Dan DeVone in this series, it's going to be Dylan Brooks.
You know, speaking of nice guys, I am beginning to rethink and what it is that you were saying last week about poor Buddy Hield, because he really is sort of the whipping boy over there. I think he's such a nice guy, and I see so many people going after him simply because, you know, that happens to I always say this, my sister, who is the middle child in our family, is the nicest. Like, she's always appeasing people, right? You see that sometimes where the middle child always wants to help, like the helper. And people sometimes when we were younger would go after her because she was just so nice. And you knew there wasn't going to be any blowback. I think there's sort of that with Buddy Hield. He's just like sort of this punching bag that I think I'm like, come on, man, leave the dude alone.
Well, your family's got some different dynamics because I'm the middle child and I'm not the one that my siblings go to for help. No, it's not that I'm not nice.
How many kids?
There's three of us.
Okay.
Yeah. So actually, shout out to my sister who's just in town from Sweden for the last couple of weeks. Brought the kids
Sweden.
In.
Sweden.
Yeah, she's probably somewhere over the Atlantic right now, flying back towards Copenhagen. But Buddy Hield is absolutely the player on the Warriors that I feel for the most because he's someone that just swings a game so much, and it's so obvious when he's got it going that the Warriors are in great shape that you feel like if he could just do this semi-consistently, they'd be in a better spot. And the Warriors, to me, it's one of the reasons why I feel good about this series. And, of course, we're going to break down all the X's and O's and what we think is going to happen. We'll give away predictions in the last hour. And 888-957-9570 is the number. YouTube and Twitch powered by First North Cal Credit Union can get in on the conversation of Warriors this week. But they have a lot of X factors, it feels like, in the series. Buddy Hield is absolutely one of them. I'm not sure he factors into this series as much for me as he might a different matchup, but they have, like, I don't know, four or five guys that I think are going to be important, not named Steph, Draymond, and Butler. Whereas the Rockets, I think it's, for me, probably one or two out of their non-main characters.
Well, forget about Draymond. When it comes to Butler and Steph, if you take them out of the picture, which is what obviously Houston is going to try to do, especially when it comes to one Steph Curry. And the thing about Houston is that they don't got to run two guys at him. They believe that they can lock him up with just Amon Thompson. We'll see what happens there. But it's got to be somebody has got to raise their hand and say, all right, I will pick up the scoring load. Or that's what scares me about this series, Ev, is that if we were to use the last couple of games as a measuring device going forward, is that the Warriors clearly need somebody consistently. And you know where I'm going to go with this. And by the way, when we get into Kuminga talk, here's the mandate. We're just going to limit it to one section. Like, well, I don't know whether you want to do it in the next half hour or coming up at 11 o'clock, whatever. Because we know it can dominate the 3 hours. So we're going to let everybody know beforehand. We're going to talk Kuminga, but we're going to do it for, you know, a half an hour, and that's it, and we're moving on if we do it at all. But
yeah,
I truly believe that somebody else has got to be a consistent scorer for the Warriors, and it's not something we haven't said all year long. What really fascinates me is I really want to sort of get into Moody and Podziemski because, well, first of all, let me just ask you how you think they played in the two sort of biggest games of the year, namely Los Angeles and, of course, Memphis in the play-in game.
I thought they played well against the Clippers. I do not think they played very well against the Grizzlies. The difference between Pods and Moody, both of them contribute with when they're not scoring, and that's what you have to do if you're a starter. Yeah. But Moody, I think, does it more visibly because he's literally guarding the other team's best player. Like, he guards Ja Morant pretty much every second that he's out there on the floor. And, for example, he had a big stop at the end of the half and blocks Morant and a big one-on-one possession. Podziemski's a little harder to gauge because when he's not making shots, there isn't that stoppage. I guess like the, you know, kind of clear thing that he does well, he just does a little bit of everything. Like he'll rebound, he moves the ball. But if he's not hitting shots, he does not help you as much as I think Moses Moody can when he's not making shots. So I think overall Pods is probably a little more in the limelight, and they're going to need him to play big because I think he has the ability to maybe be their third leading scorer in this series. But I think both of those players, much like first-time, big-time contributors, especially down the stretch in big games, I thought they were pretty inconsistent.
You know what jumped out at me is that as much as we talk about the Warriors as being this veteran-laden team in the postseason, where you don't want to take on the Golden State Warriors. And it's certainly true when you talk about their big three. Battle-tested, doesn't get anybody better when you talk about postseason play than obviously Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry. And, of course, Draymond Green's got his battle scars. But they're also young. And you may have said this, or might have been Grandy that just said, you know, the Warriors are also young. They are. And I didn't realize this. But I'll tell you this from what it is that I saw in the playing game in particular. The stage was too big for those guys. Moody and Pajemski weren't even looking at the rim at times. I've never seen Pajemski look to hand off to Butler as frequently as he did in that game. And that's exactly what it is that I was talking about all year long, where you can't simulate what it's like when your butt cheeks get a little tight in these big games and there's no tomorrow. You can act with all sorts of bravado like that of Pajemski, but when you're in that situation, things take over. And that stage was clearly too big for Moody. Moody did not want to shoot. And Pajemski, we've seen Pajemski as demonstrative as he can be and just, you know, clear aside, I got this guy. That Pajemski was not evident. And why? Because these are young basketball players, which sort of gets back to why I think Houston, as well as OKC, will struggle because they have more than just two of those young players that they're going to rely on.
Yeah, I don't know if I phrase it exactly like they're young too, but you know, I think people just assume that the Warriors, because of their three best players and the, I mean, it seems like tens of thousands of playoff games that they've played, figuratively speaking, they also have a lot of guys that just haven't been in these moments before. And two of them
that
start.
They're counting on.
Two of them start.
Yeah.
Like, that's the biggest difference. It's like, if you have a couple players, for example, the Nuggets a couple years ago when they won the championship, all of their starters had played, for the most part, in big games. KCP was their shooting guard. He had been and won in NBA Finals. Granted, it was in the bubble, but with the Lakers. Aaron Gordon had played in playoff games before. Jokic, obviously, they had been knocking at the door. Christian Brown was a rookie, but he was more of a sixth, seventh, or eighth man. Like, yeah. He was giving them contributions, but they weren't relying on him. The Warriors, while Curry, Butler, primarily those two, and to Draymond Green to some extent, they're going to, as those three players go, the Warriors go. But they need Brandon Pajemski and Moses Moody to grow up really fast. And that's a difficult thing to do. And it's also a lot to ask. For example, if in game one or game two in Houston, if those two guys, I don't know, have a game like they did in the play-in where Pajemski's, what, 1-for-5 from three, can't knock down a shot. Moses Moody, to your point, he's not really shooting the ball. I wouldn't be shocked at all. And it isn't as if we should expect these players to all of a sudden transform into the grown version of themselves. They've played well down the stretch of this season, but there's going to be some big boy moments in this playoff series. And Pods and Moody, specifically those two as starters, I don't know what I'm going to get. And that does give me some pause.
They're young basketball players.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
And they've never been in games like this, especially when it comes to Pajemski. I mean, you got to throw Quentin Post in there as well. Though Quentin Post looked I mean, he looked a little bit more comfortable than the other two.
Not against the Rockets two Sundays ago. You know, that's the thing, too. Like, the good thing about this series, I feel like, is points are a premium, but the Warriors aren't going to have to score 120 every game to win. In fact, they've won a couple of games this season against the Rockets where it's been like 99-93, which, for all intents and purposes, in 2025 might as well be a Detroit Pistons-Indiana Pacers game from the mid-2000s where they're scoring like 68 points a game. You know, this is going to be a bloodbath. And so, you don't have to worry about a guy going for 30 every single night, but you are going to need players to step up. And I don't know. I mean, I would like to think that someone like Post can play big minutes in this series, but the Rockets they get in you. Speaking of butt cheeks, they get in your grill, man. Mm. Like, they get in your jersey, and literally, whether it's grabbing off the ball or not, and especially when the calls aren't going to be as frequent in the postseason, like they have an ability to really defend at a level that I'm not sure many other teams in the West do.
They're so good, especially at that wing position, and they are really, really good defensively. And what's scary is sort of this new combo that they stumbled on late in the season when they go big and they get Adams in there with Şengün, and then they can just muck it up. The issue with Houston is going to be, and I think you guys have talked about this all week, I'm sure, is that when they get into a half-court set, they're just not very good. And obviously they don't have a go-to, although Jalen Green can be good at times. So what that means is that the one thing that the Warriors have to stay away from, again, if I'm reiterating a lot of stuff you guys have talked about, tough, because I haven't been here. I haven't had a live mic, so bear with me. And this has haunted the Warriors throughout the entire career. And this, we understand, when you play this chaotic style of play, there's going to be turnovers, and especially when you have the motion offense, you get sometimes have to thread the needle. Turnovers are going to be part of it. You cannot turn the ball over against the Houston Rockets. You can't have those 18 to 23 turnovers, as they're often prone to do, because that throws everything out the window. Because, yes, Houston struggles in the half court, but if you get them in transition and get those young boys going up and down the floor, they're going to carve you up. And the only way that you can put them in motion or help them is by those sort of lazy passes. Now, a lot of that, again, it's just by structure that you're going to live and die by that sword when you're trying to make passes in crowded areas. I get it when there's cutters and maybe you are a second slow on it. But some of those baseball passes that both Draymond and Steph love, that full court pass that maybe 30% of the time gets there, or some of the things that Steph does, it's a little nonchalant. We know he has a great handle, but when he wants to throw it with one hand, his left hand cross court, and it gets picked off, you have to, and they know this, but that is going to be one area that is going to benefit Houston. It can swing the series because that will give them offensive opportunities.
You have to assume anytime there's a turnover, it's a dunk the other way. Like, it's almost like in high school, you're going up against a team that is uber athletic. If you give that ball up, it's 2 points the other way, and you just can't do anything about it. So live ball turnovers and limiting those turnovers is going to be massive. And that's one of the reasons why it's not to say, like, if the Warriors are going to navigate a path to the postseason, I think they've laid one out for themselves that's very beneficial. In a series like this, I don't know about you, Dan. I feel like this has to be Jimmy Butler's series, because possessions are going to determine who wins this game. Who gets the most shots on goal? Who has the most chances? And Jimmy Butler takes care of the ball better than anybody else who has a high usage rate on the Warriors. He's the only one to me that really looks like he values the basketball on this team, especially in crunch time. And so it's not to say that, you know, if Steph can't be great in this series and give you a few or maybe all big games, Draymond's going to be important defensively. But in terms of taking care of the ball, whoever does that better over the best of seven is going to win, in my opinion. And the person who prioritizes the basketball more than anything, it feels like in the world when he's on the floor, is Jimmy Butler. That's why I think that he has to be the best player in this series for them.
The other way Houston gets points is off of offensive rebounds. They do it better than anybody in the NBA.
Yeah, they're number one.
And so sometimes when we have a tendency to just look at this on paper and saying they're not good in a half court set, well, it really doesn't matter if you're shooting, you know, 32% from three. If you're getting five cracks at it on one possession, I like your chances. And so again, when it comes to Adams, when it comes to Şengün, when it comes to Tari Eason and company, and these guys want to go big and they get offensive rebounds and they scrap, it may not be pretty. It may not be just ISO for Jalen Green and get to the hoop and he's going to be our leading scorer. It's not going to be that obvious, but they're going to reset the 24 on numerous occasions. And so that's always been, I mean, it's nothing new for the Warriors, right? You got to put a body on guys, and obviously they're going to be smaller. You know, at some point, Ev, they got to stop this, especially as you get older, and just go and get an athletic big, right? Like, I know that they just subscribe. It's like we do it a different way, and they're almost cocky to the point, well, listen, we won a title with Kevon Looney. I know. Make it easy on yourself. Dallas has got like five of them. OKC's got like 10 of them. Go get Gaffer. Go get somebody so that you don't have to hit your head up against this wall every single year.
Can we get one before 6 o'clock tomorrow?
I don't think so. You got one in TJD.
There he is. Yeah, I mean, look, and actually, this is a part of the postseason that I personally like the questions, right? Why is this guy going to go? Why is this guy going to get ticked? Why is he going to be important? All of these will have answers by the end of game one. But if the Warriors lose the game, well, we come in the next day. What could they have done? Could have been more TJD. You know, the Warriors are who they are. And you're right. Trayce Jackson-Davis is a big and he's athletic and all the rest. The Warriors are going to win and lose with their small ball. They always have and they always will. I know that they've had traditional centers in the past that have played more than, say, you know, Looney or TJD when he was starting at the beginning of the season, which feels like eons ago at this point. But the Warriors five of Curry, Pods, Moody, Butler, Green, that's their best five. And they are going to win or lose a playoff series with those guys on the floor. Not to say that there can't be some minutes for Post or maybe a Buddy Hield shooting it well. Gary Payton II has been closing some games instead of Pods or Moody, who have struggled in these sort of late, big, regular season or play-in scenarios. But I for people that are hoping for the Warriors to go big against Houston, I don't see it.
Yeah, but I would say that every championship run or all the good Warrior teams had those substitutions or those iterations of West, of Pachulia, of Bogut, who would come in and give you these valuable minutes. And yes, when it came to the beginning or the ending or closing of games, it would be Steph and that small lineup. But being able to go big and match girth with girth and protect the rim at stages throughout the course of a game, I think is when the Warriors were at their very best. And they struggle with that now more than ever before. So I think it's more precarious now than it's ever been. But yeah, I would agree with you that, yes, the remedy hasn't changed. It's small ball, and it always has been. But there has always been room and the influence of bigs to play a significant role in that success.
Yeah, and I think the way that they use their bigs is interesting to me because like Quentin Post is the tallest player on the team. He's their most, I guess, you know, he's 7 feet. But he probably plays away from the basket, it feels like. He's getting more down into the paint, getting nitty and gritty, but he's a perimeter-based player. Like, I want him on the three-point line shooting. I don't necessarily need him crashing the boards in the offensive glass. And their best, like, against Memphis, I know we didn't really talk much about that game, but one of the things that I found really interesting about their strategy for, and they still get out-rebounded by, I think, by like almost 15, but one of the strategies they used early in that game, instead of trying to go up and just grab the rebound, Draymond Green was just tipping it out. Like, he's not going to out-jump a 7'3" player, or Jaren Jackson Jr. And so in order to neutralize that, he would just tip the ball out towards the free throw line, and then Curry or some other perimeter player would come in and scoop it up. Like, their leading rebounder was Steph, only because he got like three or four tips early in that game from Draymond Green. And so that's kind of one of the ways that I think that even though they're a smaller team.
If you get a tip, it's not considered a rebound, is it?
No, but it should be. Like a controlled tip. Like Draymond's clearly just guiding the basketball to one of his teammates.
Yeah, but here's what I would say to that is that you're right, but you have to expend so much energy doing that. It's a lot easier if you're just 6'11", snaring and going. if you've got to expend that much energy in a seven-game series, for one game, a playing game, sure, but if you're giving up that much height and that much weight and you got a volleyball and you got a tip to keep it alive, and if you're Jimmy Butler, you just got to rotate, put a body on a guy, and work your arse off every single game towards the latter part of that series, I think it really takes a toll. I think it's a lot easier just to go out and get yourself a rim protector. I know, what is it with Kerr and you guys? Like, it's okay. It's not going to be the end of small ball. Just make it a little easier on yourself.
Yeah, but you need the bigs in this system to be able to do multiple things. I mean, I know he's not big or like traditionally tall, but Draymond Green's one of the best rim defenders in the league. He's just one of the best overall defenders in the league. And I know he's 6'6", but just because you're not a true 7-footer doesn't mean you can't play both sides as far as the lining in.
But at 35, 36 years of age, to do that for a seven-game series, I know he can do it. It's just asking a lot physically.
No. And they've chosen in recent memory to sort of go with, I mean, Trayce Jackson-Davis last year in the second round. But, I mean, they've drafted two bigs, two centers in the first two drafts of Mike Dunleavy Jr. You know, they just haven't got a rim runner. Like,
TJD can be that guy. Why are you out on TJD? I never understand you sometimes.
I don't understand your fixation on players that can't finish around the rim.
No, that's true, but...
like, you love Trayce Jackson-Davis. I'm not saying he's a stiff, but I don't expect him to play in this series. And as we've laid the groundwork for across this show, we will take calls, but in general, we will not be talking about players that aren't going to play much in this series, and Trayce Jackson-Davis is one of them, unless they get into foul trouble or something. But also Zach Edey. Zach Edey stunk on Tuesday.
I was just having fun at your expense because I know you didn't like him.
Yeah, no. But dude, if you're 7'3", you cannot go 4-for-11 when you don't shoot a shot outside of the paint.
Like, why was he playing so much?
I don't know. Maybe does someone have the answer? I thought they got rid of Taylor Jenkins and then they would get rid of Zach Edey, but they live and die with this dude. Ooh, by the way, they did punch their ticket for the right to get their ass kicked by OKC in the first round. So shout out to them. Klay Thompson's season, unfortunately, comes to a premature end last night. But I don't know. Like, that's the thing about it. If you're watching the Memphis Grizzlies, they have all the size in the world. And it just goes to show, just because you have a true 7-footer does not necessarily mean you're going to be a physically dominant team. You know, like, Şengün is, well, he's 6'11". I guess he's not a true 7-footer.
They drafted that guy.
There's a lot of guys they should have drafted, Dan. Oh, or my guy last night. I know they lost, but you see Onyeka Okongwu?
Oh, God, yeah.
He's an animal, man. Yeah, that guy inhales everything. Also not a true 7-footer.
It doesn't have to be a 7-footer. And I go back to the trade deadline last year when P.J. Washington and Gafford. Gafford was right there. I mean, you could have got Gafford. They had to give up Chris Paul, but who cares? In retrospect, he walked for nothing.
Who, by the way, played all 82 games this year.
I know, that's amazing.
He's too old.
No, he's not, because he's still active. But there was, it was against the Spurs. That's right. He played really well against the Spurs. I actually thought he played better than Pods in that game. But before the game, there was a reporter who asked her, like, you know, Chris Paul's 85 years old, and he's played 81 games. There's been some rumors about his retirement. Do you think he's going to go? And how would you characterize his career? And Steve Kerr goes, well, number one, I don't think he's done playing. He doesn't look like he wants to finish playing for quite some time. And I will not sit here and eulogize Chris Paul's career. He's 39 years old and has probably got like 5 years left.
By the way, speaking of San Antonio, shout out to Greg Popovich, who...
yeah.
He passed out or fainted at dinner the other night and so had to be ushered to emergency once again, but apparently is okay. Obviously recovering from a stroke from a couple of months back. Speaking of San Antonio, you know they're going to get Cooper Flagg. You just know that's going to end up that way. It's going to be Cooper Flagg and Wembanyama.
The league doesn't want him in Washington?
No.
Or the other horrible team this season? Is it Washington or Charlotte? I mean, keep Cooper Flagg in North Carolina.
Yeah, can you imagine Cooper and Wembanyama?
I don't want to. It'd be a pretty fearsome tandem. Nevertheless, they also got De'Aaron Fox coming back next year.
Yeah, so it gives you an excuse to go back to North Carolina to see him?
Yeah, exactly. That's Dan's team, by the way. Dan will take any young, nasty, gnarly, up-and-coming squad around the NBA. He's already claimed the Spurs. All right, when we come back on the other side, I do want to get people in the conversation. 888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVone on Warriors this week. What do you think is going to be the difference in the series? The Warriors start game one of the Western Conference first round against the Houston Rockets tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, all right here on 95.7 The Game. What's the difference? Talk to me, people.
Now back to Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game.
Well, everyone has to give a big sign of appreciation to our own Dan DeVone. He is struggling right now. I mean, I'm not going to say that he's the 37-year-old Curry, plays in a back-to-back, you know, 40 minutes here, 42 minutes there. But, dude, you got in at 3 a.m. this morning. You're still
it was late. It was just
here for the masses.
The red eye was delayed out of New York City. But, you know, a little dip in the water does all sorts of, you know, there's health benefits, and it sort of revitalizes you.
Still got in the Pacific today?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I had to, man. I had to. You had to. It's sort of like, God, who was that? There was Aaron Pryor. Look at Aaron Pryor. And he was in a fight, I want to say, against Alexis Arguello. And this is sort of the golden age of boxing. And he had this guy in his ring, and one of his handlers, his corner man, was saying, here, take a little juice, take a little juice. Guy's name was Panama Jack or Panama Joe. I think he got kicked out of boxing because
that's not a real person.
That was his nickname, but he had like this little jug that had an X on it. And every time Aaron Pryor in the late rounds was sort of tiring and withering, he would take a swig of whatever this was, man. A little scotch, whatever it was, would just like perk him up and got him through. That was sort of me jumping in the bay today.
I broke my back.
Ugh. Broke open a bottle is what he did. Let's break open the phone lines.
Let's go.
888-957-9570. Warriors this week. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVone, Steven Rizzotto behind the glass. Scott's in Berkeley. Scotty, what's up?
Good morning, gentlemen.
How we doing?
All right. Panama Lewis.
Oh, my God. You are good. You, my man, are good. And I'm assuming you didn't have enough time to look that up.
No. Panama Lewis had two issues against him. One was the bottle. The other one, I think there was a fight, and I can't remember it, and he was accused of de-padding his fighter's glove.
Yes. Yes. Very good knowledge. And I want to say that he had his license pulled. Yeah, and because of taking the padding out, the opponent got seriously injured, I want to say.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Wow.
You know, the discussion about the big has always kind of been one of my, I won't call it a pet peeve, because I've always said that Kerr has taken a lot in his coaching from both Popovich and Phil Jackson. And Phil, in the second three-peat, his main starting center was always Luke Longley. You know, and there were always complaints about Longley. He wasn't a great defender, yada, yada, yada. What he was a good passer, and he, you know, you ran him out there for 7 minutes at the start of the start of each half. This was sort of the issue of, this was sort of the necessity of both Bogut and Zaza. Mm. Again, guys who could, you know, take up space, occasionally stick, you know, in Zaza's case especially, occasionally stick an 8 to 12 footer. But all three of them were very good passers out of the paint. And, you know, and again, when you run kind of that motion triangle hybrid that Steve runs, it's, you know, you've got to have a post who could move the ball. And then, of course, the thing was about Phil was that once he would pull Longley, he would go faster. Yeah, of course, the big difference with Phil was that he had Kukoc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, you were playing small theoretically, but then again, you had a 6'11 guy out there. I was looking at the series and I was saying, did Ime already give the series away in a way after he talked about how they want to beat up Steph? Because it's like I have my issues about any guy who would decide to dip on Nia Long, but I kind of look at him and I go, why would you start saying something like that in public before the start of a series? Because it's almost like you're almost automatically challenging the referees to start calling stuff. And how do you trust any team that's going to run Dylan Brooks out there for a series?
Well, these are all good questions, Scotty. Thanks for the call. First of all, it has me thinking about, he's right about Nia Long. Like, have you seen that the Knicks are asking for Anne Hathaway and Suni Lee to be at every single home game for the playoffs because OG Anunoby plays better or played a really good game when I think Lee was courtside and Anne Hathaway was also behind the scores table? It's like, yeah, I wouldn't be able to walk out on Anne Hathaway. Is what Ime Udoka essentially did. But that doesn't take away from his basketball acumen.
Watch out for Detroit, by the way. Go ahead.
The Pistons? That's my team. You can't claim my teams. Saying,
the Knicks and the Pistons. The Knicks haven't been good this year.
You know, I love me some J.B. Bickerstaff. Also, a kid I went to high school with is their beat writer for the Pistons right now. Shout out Hunter Patterson.
By the way, before, hey, Pasta, is he Scott again?
Scott in Berkeley.
Scott in Berkeley,
What was he last week? Was he the same name?
He's been Stats in Berkeley. He's okay. Been Scott in Berkeley.
Oh, so Scott. All right. I was going to say we can just officially change him to Alias. Like, let's just give him his name is now Alias because he was changing it from Weedy. But he stands out because he clearly knows his stuff.
He's from Berkeley,
take a step further and just give him a segment.
Yeah.
Yeah, call in at 9:30 every single Saturday, Scotty. We got you.
Scott is awesome.
They haven't really needed, I think, a true traditional big man. Like, that's probably why they swung and missed on one a few years ago with James Wiseman, because they were trying to remake the wheel. But with Kerr's system, and to his point, Popovich and Jackson's system, you don't need a ball-dominant center. You need someone that understands what their role is, how to get guys open, move the ball, more importantly, and not be a complete liability on defense. And I think they have a few of those guys.
Who?
Kevon Looney and Quentin Post.
I think Quentin Post is a stretch five. Kevon Looney, I'll give you, but Kevon Looney, again, man, he's got that Fred Sanford walk, and he's like 28 years old. Nothing against Kevon. He's been through a lot.
He's been in the league for 28 years.
I know. It's just, why not just invest? I know that there isn't a Derek Lively in every draft, and you don't have that draft positioning, but I'm not talking about a 7-foot center. I'm just talking about an athlete who can protect some of the other bigs in this league.
Well, I think they would have taken Derek Lively, but I think he was selected before Pods, right?
Yeah, no, he went, I want to say he was top 10.
Yeah, and Pods was 14th, 17th, yeah. So, I mean, like, sometimes they're just not there. And again, you can't just go get any big man. We discussed this in the first segment. I don't think that all 7-footers are created equal. And while there are a pretty good crop of, you know, rim running bigs, Lively is one of them. The guy last night from Miami, Khalil Ware, he's pretty good in his rookie season for the Heat. But I don't think they really grow on trees. And also, you just have to, again, what we're finding out, and I think what we have found out over the course of 10 years with Steve Kerr, is you have to be able to fit. And not everyone fits in this. I think QP is a great fit for this system because he's a heady player. And he's certainly got his flaws, and I think some of them might be exposed during the playoffs, but he can shoot the hell out of it, and that's his job. He understands his role. And I think the Warriors, what Jimmy Butler did was just define everyone's role, and that's why they're such a better team than they were 2 months ago.
Now, I know you have to fit the Warriors' way, but are we beginning to see that morph a little bit? Are we beginning to see that change a little bit? Because is Steve Kerr recognizing that I have got to move with the times a little bit, because they never won ISO ball, but they sure as hell do now with Jimmy Butler.
Well, they did with Durant. I mean, Durant was one of, if not the best isolation scorers in the game. They just also, of course, moved the ball really well with Steph and Clay around him. They were so good. But you're right. Yeah, Jimmy Butler is more of an ISO player, and I think they're going, that's again one of the reasons why I said in the first segment, I think he has to be the best player in the series for them to win, because the Rockets, they just disrupt everything off the ball. You know, they do not allow Steph or Buddy or maybe Pods, but these shooters who just run around and try and create space by coming off of screens, they'll just grab you and they'll force the ref to make calls, which we saw a couple Sundays ago, they won't in abundance. So the Rockets are not going to let the Warriors, their motion offense just run wild.
Yeah, this is what's so fun about this. And if you get into coaching and the X's and O's and one team trying to scheme and the other team trying to counter that. So we saw what it is that Amen Thompson was able to do to Steph Curry, where he had just the one field goal and 3 points. You know that's not going to happen again, right? Like, there's an asterisk next to this game for Steve Kerr as well as Steph Curry, which is scary for the Rockets, because if you think that's a remedy going forward, good luck. Steph has put a circle around Amen Thompson and saying, listen, I like you, kid, but I'm going to bust your butt, and that's just what I do. But Ime Udoka is not going to change anything. He's going to face guard Steph. He's going to try and take him out. And what's so fun, the first thing I want to see is, how is Steve going to counter that? Because you know he's got something, whether it's coming off of some double, triple pin downs or screening hard or somebody setting a screen that you never saw do it before, whatever it is, whatever action they get Steph in, you may have never seen the entire season. This is what the playoffs, when you have one team and you have like 10 days to focus on this one team in a 7-game series, is what is so fun when you get into sort of the tactical part of the game, and especially when it comes to Steve Kerr. And this is where I think the Warriors also have another advantage. He does it as well as anybody. Like, Steve Kerr has something up his sleeve, guaranteed tomorrow night. What it is, I don't know, but he knows that he's got to counter what it is that he saw the last time Amen Thompson was in the face of one Steph Curry.
And sometimes maybe it's something simple. It could just be as simple as Steph brings the ball up, you know, instead of coming off the ball. But this is where you also see another side of Steve Kerr.
Yeah, like, I just got to tell you, you don't want to do that with Amen Thompson. Like, when that dude, somebody was charting this, I don't think there's an official stat for it. You know, when they talk about turning a player when they got to reverse their dribble, nobody turned a guy because he picked you up 94 feet. He turned a guy like 6 times before he got to the timeline. And apparently it hadn't been done in like 15 years. That's what he does, man. He gets on your dribble hand and he's turning you and he's turning you. You don't want Steph with the ball. He's going to have to exhaust so much energy with that little, well, he's not little, but that Amen Thompson who can run all day at age, whatever, 21, 22.
Well, he's also just going to be attached to him at the hip from the moment.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Like, he's, it doesn't matter really what you do. That's how good of a defensive player I think this kid already is at age 22. Like, he's going to be on him like white on rice the moment that he's on the court. He's going to guard him in the tunnel if he could. Like, that's just who he is. So I don't know what the adjustment's going to be, but my point is, this is also where you see a different side of Kerr. You really see that kind of that basketball junkie, that like maniacal side of him that he has and shown as a player. But it doesn't come out because he's such a nice guy at the podium. And, you know, he's making political statements with his Harvard basketball shirt, and he's well spoken. But at his core, like, he's a MF-er, man. Like, Steve Kerr is such a competitive dude, and it comes out in different ways. But the postseason, where you hear him talk about adjustments and matchups and X's and O's, like, that's his crack. I mean, that is his narcotic. It is basketball, and that's why it's the best time of the year.
For those of you that can go back to the days of Bill Walsh, when I was a child growing up, you get Bill Walsh extra time to prepare for one game, whether he's putting Guy McIntyre in the backfield or whatever it is that he's going to do for a Super Bowl. You give him 2 weeks to prepare for a Super Bowl, guarantee Bill Walsh is going to out-scheme the opposing coach. And I think the Warriors have that advantage. When you talk, and not to take anything away from Udoka, you know what I like about M.A.? And I think you and I are on the same page, because he seems to be public enemy number one, which is part of the reason why I like that series. You need the heel, right?
But I also think he's equally respected by the Warriors, by their players. Like, I don't think you'll hear Draymond Green talk about Ime Udoka the way he talks about like a Taylor Jenkins or some other lesser coach.
What it is that Udoka is doing with his team, very similar to your man Bickerstaff out in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Nobody respects us. Nobody thinks we belong here. It's us against the world. Every foul call, I guarantee you, The league wants to see the Warriors and the Lakers. All right? The refs don't want us in this thing. Nobody respects you. They don't think you're a legitimate two seed. This is a team that's synonymous with championships. Go out and get, they are going to be fueled. And it's almost to the point where Detroit, as well as Houston, that's why they're so nasty. I truly believe it starts at the top, that Udoka cultivates that sort of energy with this team. And one of the reasons why they're so successful.
Yeah, they kind of embody, I think, his, and a lot of teams take on the, you know, the character of their coach. But Udoka, it feels like that's who he wants as a basketball team. Like the five players on his floor, they're all different and they all have their strengths and weaknesses. But it's funny that they're in the same city. But I keep thinking about watching the Houston Cougars, the basketball team this year in the NCAA tournament. Like, Kelvin Sampson is that kind of coach. You see the five players that are swarming. They all run. They're fast as hell. They make these hockey line changes. They get in your jersey. They curse at you. It's almost like they're playing a different sport, but they drag you into the mud. And that's the way the Houston Rockets play. And they're young, and they're inexperienced enough to not know any better. And that's what we were talking about, how Pods and Moody are inexperienced, and you're not necessarily sure what you're going to get in big games. That can also work in a positive fashion for both sides. But in regards to the Rockets, it's like, I don't know how Jalen Green's going to play. I don't know how Şengün's going to react. But what I do know is they're going to try and beat the hell out of you. And if this series gets deeper and deeper, especially after this first three-game set where you have 2 days off between game one and game two, 2 days off between game two and game three. When the series condenses and you go every other day, that's also where I could see Ime Udoka saying, we're going to run these old guys into the ground. We're going to make sure that by game five or game six, if we can get there, that this team is toast and they got no legs in the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter.
Or beat them into the ground, because that's who he was as a player as well.
Yeah.
When he was with San Antonio and Popovich, he was the enforcer. He was a four. That's how he got into the league. That's how he got run, is exactly what it is that his team is doing. And that's defense and just enough offense.
888-957-9570. Warriors this week. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVone with you. Breaking down the Houston Rockets of the Golden State Warriors. 2-7 in the first round of the Western Conference playoffs. Let's go to Chico. Talk to our guy, Frank. Frankie, good morning. What's going on, man? How you doing?
First off, great show today. You guys are on point. Even some of the callers had some really great points as well. The comparison, and I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. The comparison to the Bulls, though, I found that really interesting. I know it's not the sexiest answer, but I think there's a real reason why the Warriors go out and get a particular type of center. And I know as fans, we have expectations for a certain type of player. But if you look at even The Last Dance and the parallels of the Bulls, when they made that, when Krause was considering to go after Kemp, as long as we look, if you watch that and you looked at the way the players reacted to that, as long as we have Draymond Green and Steph Curry, they're going to want to win and play a particular way because that's the way they won. And you get a center who goes after rebounds, sets good screens, passes the ball. They know what they need to do. And I just think that the Warriors have shown you consistently, even with Looney playing the majority of the minutes, they can win this way, especially with Jimmy Butler now giving them a new element in isolation. And I do think that caller had a great point about what is Ime thinking. Like, I guarantee you this, Steph will get three more free throws a game because of that statement by Ime. Okay, that's all I had to say. You guys are awesome.
Appreciate that, Frank. Yeah, I think the other part of it, too, is Ime realizes there's less adjustments for his team to make. Like, it's really just going to be about how hard they play, and is that level of play good enough to beat the Warriors? Like, I think we're going to find out, again, also because there's the first few games of this series, it's set up. The Warriors have 4 days of rest. They get rest the first few games. Like, if the Warriors lose this series, it's because the Rockets are just simply a better basketball team. I don't think it's going to be because of fatigue.
I can just tell you from spending time out on the East Coast that what Ime Udoka says and his attitude specifically against the Golden State Warriors, he represents a lot of people. And it's just sort of who we are, where we hate on people that are good, that are handsome like that of a Steph Curry, that are good people, that have a good family life, whether we're envious or what have you, when Udoka says they're a bunch of crybabies, quit crying, and does not wants to knock off the pretty boy Steph Curry. I am just telling you, over the last 10 years, that whether it's New York or the Eastern Seaboard, there's a lot of people that believe Ime Udoka is the next and like sort of the savior. And people love what it is that he represents, that don't even have any skin in this game. That the one guy that's not afraid to say you're a crybaby and we're here to take you out. It's time for the new generation. I'm telling you, I'm not one of those, but he represents a huge contingent in this country.
But one thing that is dangerous about that is, and it reminds me a little of the Memphis series a couple of years ago, not just because Dylan Brooks is on the team, but when you play that game, when you start to call the Warriors crybabies and these pretty boys and they're jump shooters, you don't realize the kind of nastiness that it can extract. Like, the Warriors can get down and dirty too. Kerr is a basketball junkie. Curry is the petty king. Draymond Green does not mind getting his hands dirty in a postseason series. In fact, I think he relishes that challenge. Jimmy Butler is someone that we've seen go head-to-head with a Grant Williams and that will win those kind of one-on-one game-within-the-game battles. The Warriors, I think this series is going to show us how nasty they can get, how nasty they can be. And even at their elder age, some of those young players too. Quentin Post has got a chip on his shoulder. He doesn't mind talking to LeBron James or getting into it with other teams. So the Warriors, I know that they may not on paper look as physical or as daunting as a Houston Rockets team, and they certainly don't have that Ime Udoka sort of physicality or swagger. But I'm very curious to see how they match the Rockets' nastiness.
Oh, the Warriors are not soft.
There's but a no lot of people portray them as soft.
This team is not soft, and they get after people as well. And that's why this is going to be so much fun. Something has to give here. And I have no idea what's going to happen, but I feel pretty comfortable that Draymond will be in the eye of that storm, that Udoka, if those two square off, Kerr may get, who knows, with Dylan Brooks, with all these characters, Şengün and Draymond, you got Steven Adams and Draymond. It's going to be entertainment for sure. Let's get to some of these calls.
All right, let's do it. 888-957-9570 is the number. Chris is in Sonoma. Chris, what's going on, my man? Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Awesome.
Beautiful. Glad to hear that. Difference in the series to me is you hit it, the coaching, and secondarily that leads to the way the officials call physicality. But to me, fellas, Udoka is the epitome of false hustle. Like, there is a line that is not to be crossed, and that is, especially in the NBA, coaches talking to the opposing players and challenging them. And I think that guy lacks character and integrity for sure. And I think he will be completely flummoxed by the way the Warriors counter his false hustle mentality that we're going to beat you up. This so reminds me of Bill Walsh's 49ers when they were accused of being the wine and cheese crowd. And you hit it earlier with Guy McIntyre in the backfield. I don't like Udoka. There's very few coaches that I would say that about. And I think he just is too full of himself. So maybe he should put on a uniform and go out and tangle with the Warriors and see what happens. I'm serious, man. The guy just irks me. He does stuff that you're not supposed to do.
I got you, Chris. Well, he did go at Steph Curry. I think it was right before halftime of that last game where they played each other.
Well, I wouldn't say go after. The two just happened to be walking off and in the same vicinity. It's not as though he walked after Steph Curry and dressed him down.
No, but there's a purpose in where you're kind of taking a particular angle or route to the locker room. Like, I think he wanted to say something to Steph.
Oh, there's no doubt. And everything that the college has laid out is why this series is so much fun. You need a heel. You need someone to point it. What did he say in Scarface? What did Al Pacino say when he was eating lunch? You need me. You need to point a finger and say, there goes the bad guy. You need me. That's exactly what makes this series so much fun.
You say the series needs a Buddy Hield?
We already got one.
Yeah, I know. Chavano! Where you at, buddy? Where you at, buddy? All right, we got to hit a break here, but I see your calls. Jan, Jimmy, Austin, we'll get to you on the other side. Warriors this week with Evan Giddings and Dan Devone. Come on, people. This is the best time of the year. Where are you at? Warriors, Rockets, tomorrow, game one of the first round of the series. We got your coverage right here on 95.7 The Game. We're back after this.